Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
It's Kyle O'Reilly.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
I'm Rocky Asuka Romero.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk, home of Lou Gowen.
Support WrestleTalk.
Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Lou Gowen is, quote the Raven, nevermore.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
But you really should support WrestleTalk and you should follow them and subscribe right now.
Ollie told me to say this, so I guess it's okay.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Make sure you watch and listen to WrestleTalk.
Or better yet, take just a moment, stop what you're doing, and bask in their glory.
Do us all a favor and subscribe.
Congratulations, you got here. Now subscribe and support. Thanks.
Welcome to the Wrestle Ramble review of SummerSlam 2019, a show that we are boldly calling the best WWE pay-per-view of 2019. I'm going to stand by that. I enjoyed the heckins out of the show last night, and chiefly because of what I think is going to go down as one of the most memorable angles ever for in-ring debut of The Fiend. That's like Undertaker levels of debut. Kane bursting through he ripped off the... I always confuse those two. That's the Giant. Not the Giant. Kane. I'm Ollie Davis. This is Lou Gowen. I've already said welcome, so press the thumbs up button, give us a subscribe, leave a comment down below saying what you thought of SummerSlam. We've been live streaming non-stop, really, since NXT TakeOver on Saturday night, and we are also joined by Chopper Pete Quenelle on your Super Chats.
Hi. How's it going, guys? Are you exhausted yet?
Yeah, I'm kind of tired. I don't know. Come on now.
Chop of the morning to you. All right.
There we go.
Chop of the afternoon to you.
You spoke a lot, but you didn't once say chop.
Yeah, I know. Chop of the afternoon to you.
You had a lot of love in these Super Chats, Pete.
Did
people
I?
Who were missing you and just sending their chop of the mornings.
That's great. Thanks, guys.
Think I'm big-headed, mate. Yeah, so getting your Super Chats, we'll be talking about them after the main discussion point, which is, for me, what encapsulates why this pay-per-view was so great, and that is The Fiend's debut.
Holy hell. I put out a tweet like 2 hours after SummerSlam finished that was just, I haven't stopped thinking about The Fiend. And to be honest, it's more than 2 hours later, I still haven't. I've been to sleep. I was thinking about it. I'm going to tell you a little story, actually. Last night, you and I were getting ready to record the review, the 10-minute review that's going to be going up at 5:30. And I came down here first to record my side of the rushes. And the way that our studio is set up, we've got all of our lights plugged into a sort of a multi-plug socket thing. And we've got one set up for the Ramble studio and one set up for the green screen side of the studio. I accidentally pulled that plug out and all the lights went out.
Oh, no, you did that.
And it's super dark in here. And I suddenly thought, God, what if The Fiend's standing behind me? Like, a genuine, like, fear of, like, what if The Fiend is here?
We were deliriously drunk and tired.
So, yeah, so it's been playing on my mind. And it was so unbelievably cool.
There are a few things in just, like, the stuff I'm interested in where I just get obsessed about them and cannot stop thinking about them for weeks. CM Punk's pipe bomb promo. That was my life for a month. All I could think about, all I wanted to talk about. I would just watch every single second I could, rewatch that promo, watch other bits around it, find podcasts of people talking about it. Just, I couldn't get enough. Probably this year, Endgame was a similar thing. Lucky to have two in 1 year. And I'm honestly placing The Fiend's debut alongside that. I am just... Because there is so much detail and thought gone into the execution of this character. Every single movement, every single detail on the mask, in the entrance, the song, the lighting structure, everything, the moveset, it all is the tantalizing glimpse of a much larger unspoken lore to this character.
Absolutely. But I think one of the cool things about this is that this didn't come from a writer. This did not come from Vince. This came from the wrestler himself who pitched this idea. And he had spent, seemingly, months upon months upon months figuring out this plan and formulating this thing and creating this world and this lore, as you said, and be like, "And here is my pitch. This is what I want to do. Let me try it. I promise you it will work.
Let me in.
Let me in." And it really worked.
I've got so much respect for Bray because usually when people re-debut, they debut a whole new character and it's kind of like, let's just ignore all the stuff that happened before it. But like the great Geoff Johns always did when writing DC Comics, and he's like, "Huh, I've got 20 years of convoluted, contrived, not that effective backstory, but I'm not going to just completely ignore it. I'm going to wrap it up in one panel in a nice little bow, and then we can move on with Green Lantern." And that's what he's done. That's Geoff Johns didn't do this. Maybe he did. That's what Bray Wyatt has done with The Fiend, in that he hasn't ignored all the Wyatt family stuff that's come before it. He's wrapped it in a little bow, and that is now context to this new fascinating character. But also, massive credit to WWE, because although this came from Bray Wyatt, WWE okayed it.
Oh, yeah.
And Vince McMahon gets a lot of flack for all the bad stuff that happens on the show because he's the man who's ultimately responsible. But he has let this breathe. He has let the artistic vision of Bray be mostly untouched and, you know, raw from what we can see. And that's his decision too.
100%. There was that report from Pro Wrestling Torch that said that 99 out of the ideas that are presented to Vince McMahon, he rejects. If this is the one in the 99 and 100, then I'm fine with that. Like, because this is so, so cool. And I just think it was... We said on the stream last night, it was flawless. We said in the headlines review, it was flawless. And I think this is the single greatest re-debut of a wrestling character in the history of this sport.
Yeah, the important caveat is re-debut there, of course, yes, because there have been many fantastic debuts, and this, but still, if this was a debut, I'd still say it would rank in the top 10.
I was gonna say, if you want to call this the debut of The Fiend, you certainly could do. You could certainly, because this is technically a new character, but the genius of it is that it's a new character that is tied to the old character. Even like the symbolism of his entrance of carrying down the lantern was Bray Wyatt's old gimmick, where he'd have the lantern there. The lantern is now made of the old Bray Wyatt head. So it's essentially he is carrying the severed head of his old gimmick and carrying and look, the symbolism of his old gimmick in his new entrance for his new gimmick. It's so cool.
It's on the nose, but I've got no problem with that.
Absolutely no issues with that whatsoever.
So I was just saying re-debut, there's not many of those. That's totally incorrect. Technically, Kane is a re-debut because he was originally Isaac Yankem.
Yeah, but I think that was better than Kane's debut.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't actually realise, now I'm thinking about it, there is loads of re-debuts.
Oh, yeah.
People tend to go through a bunch of different gimmicks, even in WWE before they hit on the gold.
I was going to say, the 90s in particular was like a treasure trove of people doing a certain gimmick before, like, you know, Hunter Hearst Helmsley into Triple H is technically a re-debut of a new character.
Stone Cold Steve Austin as the Ringmaster.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess, this is a real drastic change, a lot has gone into it. So just to recap what happened. The entrance was just magnificent with Bray's old theme music, but done in this even darker style, as you put it.
Yes, the darker version
of an already dark song.
Yeah.
So, super dark.
Yeah, yeah.
And the crowd, they've got their fireflies out.
Yeah.
There was Yowie Wowie chants during the match.
Holy S after he finished the entrance. It was... There are certain entrances that will stick in my mind forever. One of those is Shinsuke Nakamura's NXT debut.
Oh, yeah.
And like when that happened and the crowd were just in awe and shouting, "Holy yes," just for the entrance alone. And that got the exact same response of people just going like, holy, this is awesome. And like, yeah, when the match was over, everyone just chanted, that was awesome.
Yeah. The entrance is such a big part of characters like this. But then, what we were all quite worried about, because it's the only bit we hadn't seen yet, I guess, is how this character was going to be portrayed in the ring. Mm-hmm. I remember being very scared in the early days that Bray would come down in the cardigan in a sort of comedic way, and then he'd put the mask on when it was time to finish off the character, to his opponent, which would have been, you know, hokey.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good S word. But here, the Fiend wrestled with taking his mask off before he got in the ring. So there's already that struggle, already that physicality. And in fact, masks are sometimes quite difficult to work with because you haven't got actual facial expressions. But sometimes, as we've seen with all the great masked wrestlers, it almost levels you up because the audience can project what they're feeling onto the sort of tabula rasa of your face, which is sometimes more impactful. It's the stuff in the shadows that you fill in by yourself that's more affecting, really.
Yeah, your point of Kane is a great example of that. Kane's original mask is way scarier than the masks he had in his later career when he effectively said, I can't breathe in this thing anymore and it's really hampering me. I want it cut around my mouth. I want it to stand here. And now his mask looks really dumb. And it's looked dumb since about 2003. But you go back to like 1998 through to 2000 Kane or 2001 Kane.
Yeah.
That's like such an awesome mask. Mm. And it's so scary.
But in the actual ring, Bray just felt like a... Again, not completely different.
Nope.
Because he still had the few spots. He still had the bend backwards, yep, creepy crab spot. But he just... He felt like he'd changed, evolved as a style.
It was the headbutts.
The headbutts. Just his body. He looks like someone has drawn him.
Yeah.
Because his legs are muscly, but then he's so broad on top. He's got in tremendous shape, presumably from the Muscle Man dance.
Well, absolutely, which I'm hoping I will then replicate when I will be doing the Muscle Man dance later. Pete, you're a child. would you say that he glowed up?
Is that a term?
I don't know. You're the kid here, mate.
Glowed up? I don't even know.
Glowed up?
That's a Naomi thing, isn't it?
I thought that was like what kids say these days, like when you become, like when you level up into a new form. And it feels like he's leveled up into a new form.
I feel like it's something like that. I don't know if it's glowed up, because I feel like that's a Naomi thing, but
okay.
I think maybe it's something to do with a glow or something like that.
Maybe I've got it completely wrong.
Imagine if they Funkasaurus this. After weeks and weeks of really serious video packages, out comes Brodus Clay as the Funkasaurus. Monkey's on a roll here.
Somebody call my mama.
And and Bray Wyatt does come out glowed. And just does Naomi's entrance. Kind of want that more now.
This is going to be one of those things to kind of get us back on point after I've kind of taken us off track a little bit. This is now one of the coolest things in WWE. In fact, actually, it's probably the coolest thing in wrestling at the moment that everyone will be fuming is not in WWE 2K20.
Oh my God, you're totally right. It's a good point. Just to talk more to Chopper here. Chopper is you don't do well with horror films, do you?
Not even a little bit, no.
So how were you watching this?
Well, I couldn't watch it live because various reasons, but I heard it was amazing, so I very quickly went to watch it on the network. And the network was out of sync, so I couldn't watch it on there, so I went on the YouTube channel to watch it. The entrance was incredible. It's so good. Because I think for this, it doesn't actually make me scared like a horror movie does, but I'm just in awe of the character work that's there. So I very much appreciate it, and it's awesome.
Even the Bray Wyatt head, because that lantern, when you look closely at it, those eyeballs are stitched up.
It's a total Tom Savini thing.
Oh.
It feels like it's come directly from the set of one of the early Friday the 13th movies.
Do you want to say who Tom Savini is, just in case?
So Tom Savini is a special effects maestro from horror movies in the 80s and 90s. Actually, even the 70s as well. He did stuff for Dawn of the Dead with George A. Romero, Friday the 13th. In fact, the character of Tommy Jarvis from Friday the 13th Part 4 is based on Tom Savini. Fun fact for you.
I don't know if he...
He was in an episode of Walking Dead, I believe.
Right, because one of the special effects guys, visual effects, whatever, and special effects, I think, on Walking Dead actually does a lot of the direction of the episodes as well.
Yeah,
but
that's
not him.
I think there was a Tom Savini head on a spike or something in an episode of
Walking
Dead.
Right. But yeah, just to wrap up this match, Bray literally broke. No, not literally. That's the wrong use of the word, literally.
Yeah, it's this image right here.
Yeah, he had a spot, a new move, part of his move set where he just cracks the head like that, like you would kill, sneak up behind a henchman on a boat in the 80s and just silently eliminate them.
Or if, you know, to bring it back to Tom Savini and Friday the 13th, if you were Jason. Jason has often wiped out people just with the twist of the neck.
But if, for me, that could have been the finish.
Yeah, we said at the time, like, we freaked out when he did that.
Because it's... That's the sort of thing that you could just protect as a, oh my God, he did the... Like the punt or the pop-up powerbomb on the apron or the stomp. Like, those are... It's a big move that will write the person out for a month at least. But you only use it very rarely, get that move over, and like the rest of the time, he actually won the match with the mandible claw, a pinning mandible claw, rather than a tap.
Yeah, coup de grace. So Finn went up to do the coup de grace. Finn actually did get a little flurry of offense, which was really, really awesome, actually. Because I think that it turned it into not a squash match, which I really appreciate, and I think it actually made the match even better. But yeah, Balor went up for the coup de grace, and he caught him with the mandible claw and just threw him to the mat. And yeah, choked him and pinned him, essentially. And I think you said that the only thing you didn't like about the match, aside from the commentary, which was pretty awful.
I would have just had no commentary for this match.
I mean, I would say that for a lot of WWE matches, but yeah. But
I think it would have worked here.
In particular, yeah.
And then it just, like, afterwards, what was it? Bray's at the Fiends at the ramp doing this cool exit at the end, and Michael Cole... What did he say about The Undertaker?
Like, what was that? Oh, yeah. Oh, he said something about The Undertaker.
Yeah, I was like, shut up, Michael Cole.
Yeah. But I think the other thing you said was that Finn was sort of up after the mandible claw.
Mm. Yeah, I would have had him down for helped out and stuff.
And it ties into the next snap thing that you were talking about. Like, as a way to write off a character, because the report is that Finn's taken some time off. So you really could have, like, sold this thing that Finn was so devastated that he's now going to be away for a few months.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So let's get into your super chats to see what you thought before we get on with the full review of the show.
So first things first, we've got a lot of them, nice. So we'll just do some for now.
Money.
Triveshgar Puri says, who's the Fiend's next victim? The Miz, in my opinion.
That's a good, because you don't want to give him people like Kurt Hawkins or people he can easily squash. I think you want meaty, substancey feuds. And Miz would lose nothing if he lost to him.
Do you know who I'd pick? Matt Hardy. You tie into the whole Deleters of Worlds thing, and you essentially build a storyline based around, you kind of like tie into sort of like previous Bray Wyatt feuds or partnerships, and that's how you do is the next feud.
Yeah, or maybe sort of an interim step.
Yeah,
because
it could be like an interim thing. Yeah, it's not a way to like let's get him over even further, but just a way to like let's further this character. Let's take a few more steps forward before we take the next big leap with a big feud.
Because you had WWE legend Kurt Angle, WWE legend Mick Foley, then you can have legend status Matt Hardy.
Yep.
And then, of course, WWE legend The Miz.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if we're talking about sort of like the Mount Rushmore of WWE legends, that's your four right there.
The Miz is, got a visitor's pass at least.
Yeah.
Tim Arndt comes in and says, I can confirm that during the Fiend versus Balor match, an injury was suffered. Don't worry, though, my wrist will recover.
So the implication there is that Tim Arndt enjoyed it so much, he masturbated so furiously, he has injured his own arm.
Oh, yeah, totally. So scared he got a boner.
It's believable. Sparks says, was that an actual Edge return or just a segment?
Now, yeah, So since SummerSlam ended, you and I, we did our review and have been asleep since. So I haven't listened to any Wrestling Observer Radio or been on to any of the news sites. Has there been any speculation on like an Edge in-ring return for like a Saudi show or something?
Not that I've heard of, no. People are still just like, Edge did a spear. We don't know.
Okay, that's interesting.
I keep forgetting. Yeah. You know, I was like, wow, that was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so cool, though.
Moin Car Nib says, should Gargano be Seth's next feud if he's called up? Also, who do you think The Fiend's next opponent is? We just talked about that one. Love the ramble.
Oh, I love you too.
Love you too. I think if Gargano was going up to the main roster, which certainly seems to be the case, he is going to be Cesaro this time next year.
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't put him against Seth right away anyway, because Seth needs to win with the Universal title a bit.
Chris Field says, Trish versus Charlotte was my favorite. Better than Natty versus Becky, in my opinion. What do you guys think? Love you all.
We'll get onto it in the full review, but I really enjoyed the Becky-Natalia match. I thought Charlotte-Trish actually dragged a lot. The crowd were very into it, and I'm fine with being the odd man out here, but for me, I wasn't really invested in it because I didn't believe in the action. But I really liked the angle afterwards where Trish got the big send-off.
It needed 5 minutes less.
Yeah, it was the second
longest match on the show, and it really didn't need to be.
Mayor of Painesville, Dan comes in and says, good afternoon, everyone. For the first time in months upon months, I liked a pay-per-view.
Yay!
I am pretty emotional about Edge hitting a spear. Yeah. So what do you think? Is Edge ready for a comeback? Have a great evening.
I mean, I don't know. Bearing in mind, like, the 2011 retirements was, if I do this, I could risk paralysis or even death. So those are quite big stakes.
But science has moved on.
Exactly. Shibata's just made his return.
Exactly, yeah,
You know, he's effectively made a return to wrestling, and Daniel Bryan is wrestling again, so, hey, who knows? Mm. Who knows?
Ryan Kester says, this weekend was really special for me. I've been watching you lot for a while, but this was the first time I was able to join in the chat. You all made some great shows, truly memorable. Thank you.
Because of everyone. It's so nice watching the pay-per-views.
It is,
together.
Yeah. To the point where I think we were discussing last night, we should have this chat off air, that we might just do every pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah.
Mark Osborne Jr. says, The Fiend versus Kofi or Seth?
I would love The Fiend to beat Kofi. Like, to be the one to take the WWE title off him.
He's a raw guy now. Cole was doing commentary. SmackDown was getting the Firefly replays. I think he's a raw guy.
What a brands. Graham Scrivener says, what if Edge and Christian return and form with The Fiend to make the new brood?
Well, I mean, if you want to ruin a character, yeah, that's certainly one way to do it.
Yeah, now that I love it so much, my testicles are sucked within my abdomen because I'm now like, how are they going to screw it up?
Yeah.
How are they going to screw it up?
Yeah, it was funny, guys. Going through all the comments on like the live stream video and in the highlights video that we did as well, which was just everyone going like, "Please don't screw this up! Please don't screw this up! Oh my god, I really like this! Don't ruin this for me!"
And finally, for now, J-Dog Belinsky. I feel like I'm gonna know the answer to this question, but he says, "What was your favorite match on the whole show?"
Oh, favorite match in ring, AJ Ricochet. Loved it.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to say... Yeah, I mean, my favourite thing on the show was The Fiend and, like, the encompassing match.
Yes,
but I think for, like, just a wrestling match, I think I probably would go AJ Ricochet as well.
I'd agree.
Dig, diggity, dig, diggity, dog. Quaking.
Let's get on with the full review of the play-by-play. So, on the pre-show, the first hour, we really didn't have to live stream. People were effectively watching us watch Booker T talk.
And while eating Chinese food.
Yeah. But the
which was delicious.
There was one cool bit where Finn Balor is prepping backstage in the locker room and the OC come in. It's your obligatory SummerSlam Bullet Club reunion.
The only club that matters.
Yeah, and AJ calls Finn his little brother.
Yeah.
And he says, if you need help for your match with The Fiend later on, just say when. And then AJ, Carl and Luke have this really funny bit where they go, when? And they all do a little too sweet. And they're like, oh, my hand's cramping. What is this? And they do a too sweet together. Really funny stuff.
Right, yeah. Really, really cool.
Finn was a bit of a, you know, wooden plank charisma-wise again.
But he was saying towards the end that, you know, he was considering the possibility. Mm. So sowing those seeds of Finn joining the OC, which, yes, please, yes, please, yes, please.
Yeah. Then the first actual match came in the second hour of the pre-show. Only Lorcan versus Drew Gulak for the Cruiserweight title.
I think, to be honest, we could probably just record us saying this stock phrase and use it for every Cruiserweight match going forward, which was really good in-ring action, no one cared.
Yeah, the crowd were pretty much silent. Look, this was a good match, and in-ring-wise it was very snug, which I enjoyed a lot. But if you compare it to the other Cruiserweight matches of the past, the brilliant Cedric Alexander, Buddy Murphy stuff, it doesn't even come close for me.
No.
As much as I love Oney Lorcan, and those running uppercuts are fantastic to watch. This was just a kind of weekly TV match, and the finish came, you know, where you would expect,
yeah.
As opposed to, oh, here's another 3 more minutes of really heightened drama.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Drew Gulak retained. Then there was a bit of comedy where Drake Maverick is looking for R-Truth in the pre-show panel area.
Yep. Looking as small as possible. I felt that they gave Jerry the King Lawler and whoever he was sat next to booster seats so they could look taller than Drake Maverick while he was standing up.
Yeah, Coachman's tall.
Yeah.
So that didn't help things. But the shot was of Drake behind, sort of talking, looking for Truth and Carmella, but Truth and Carmella were hidden in front of the set. They couldn't... Drake couldn't see them, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then like Drake chases them round, he falls over, which is a bit of, you know,
comedy. It's jumping the shark.
Yeah,
I thought the 24/7 title was going to go in a different direction once Maria had won it, but it just feels like they went, let's go back to the old trio again. And I feel this trio ran their course 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. It was a great 2 months.
Yeah, really.
I really enjoyed all the Drake Truth
loved
stuff.
Loved it.
But it came to an end.
Yeah.
And it was passed on to a quite intriguing new direction. But they've just gone back to the well, unfortunately.
Unfortunately so.
Apollo Crews took on Buddy Murphy next in an added match on just a few hours before the show.
Yep.
And, yeah, you're like, Buddy Murphy, you're on the main roster now. You're not just a 205 Live guy. And here you are still on the kickoff show.
He got called up to the SmackDown roster after WrestleMania, and this is his debut match for the main roster. And it's at SummerSlam on the pre-show in a match that ended in a DQ.
It's pretty much a 205 Live match.
It was a joke.
Yeah. But when they were wrestling, I thought this was the level of quality I would usually expect from 205 Live matches.
But Apollo Crews can't be in 205 Live, Ollie. The comments have told you this numerous times.
He's quite obviously kayfabe under 205 pounds, I think. But yet, this was more of an angle. The match went about 5 minutes. But then Rowan appeared, Big Red.
Big Red.
And quite brutally beat up Buddy Murphy. Because,
oh, yeah.
Of course, Buddy Murphy told on him at the end of SmackDown to Roman Reigns,
yes.
As Rowan being the man behind those Roman Reigns attacks.
And we saw Daniel Bryan backstage looking conflicted, is the way I would describe. He's still unsure of... It's still hard to get a read on what Daniel Bryan thinks of this whole situation.
Yeah, and I thought when we saw this angle, I was like, oh, okay, so this is foreshadowing something that's going to go down in SummerSlam itself.
And the fact that we got 3 or 4 replays of the Roman angle, we thought, oh, well, there's definitely going to be something played out on this show. Nope.
There was no Roman Reigns appearance, which was bizarre for a SummerSlam. There was no Daniel Bryan appearance outside of this little backstage shot. No further continuation of this storyline, apart from this, you know, the little Rowan bit. It's weird, and to be honest, I don't like events so big as SummerSlam being used as weekly TV.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I actually, again, to give Vince credit, if Meltzer's report is to be believed, is that we were going to get Roman versus Bryan or Rowan, but Vince decided that the storyline needed more time to develop and then took the match off the card. I'm giving a massive thumbs up to that, because why rush something? Let something breathe. Look at the brilliance we got with Bray Wyatt. Like, let these things breathe and gestate. So we're giving props to Vince. I'm going to give him props to that.
You're right. I agree. But it's a situation of his own making. Start the storyline sooner! Stop rewriting SmackDown a few hours before it goes on air.
Bryan was going to have his career-altering announcement, so he was tied up in all of that, which has now been dropped.
Tiddlewax. Don't give me that. Then we got Elias coming out. He sang a nasty song about Toronto.
Yeah.
So Toronto clapped along with him.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. this doesn't get heel heat anymore. Not real heel heat, anyway.
There was a few good lines
it's pantomime.
Yeah.
It's designed not to... Because he just goes, and the Raptors suck. So you go, boo. But you're not booing him because you don't like him and you think the Raptors are great. You're just booing him because you know you have to.
Yeah, I get a kick out of it. But after he's ragged on Toronto for about 3 minutes in a song, Edge comes out. Edge's music hits, and we were both like, yes, I love this song.
On this day.
And see it, like, every time I see Edge come out, I just forget how much I love Edge.
Yeah.
He's so intense. He's got such a great look. I love the guy.
So cool.
And he comes down to the ring. He doesn't pick up a microphone. And you called it right away.
I said the way they were standing in the ring, I was like, he's going to hit a spear. And you went, no.
No.
And I was like, he's not holding a mic. And then you said, the way they're standing in the ring, though. And then he charged and hit this spear. And we lost our goddamn minds.
It was crazy. It's so, like, that is a huge sort of development. It might not mean anything in terms of a future in-ring return.
But it does mean it's the first spear from Edge in 8 years.
And that was a joy to see.
Oh, it was a joy to see.
I mean, wasted on the pre-show, really.
Yeah.
That's sort of a great spot, I would have said, for the main card.
As a way to sort of like, no, I mean, I was about to say buffer between some matches, but I mean, it got such a good like pop, then it might have actually damaged the match that came after.
No, I think but it's not a match, is it? So that sort of gives people to recharge
in-ring
bit.
That might be true, yeah. But I thought it was a really, really awesome moment for Edge.
Then we got Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus the Iconics in another lately added match for the women's tag titles. This was pants.
Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross are now babyfaces. That is it now. I think that we can definitely say, as a fact, they are now babyfaces, because the commentators were talking about what a great friend Nikki Cross is to Alexa Bliss and what a great friend Alexa Bliss is to Nikki Cross. So that whole storyline that Bliss is just messing with her or whatever has been dropped or whatever, and they are now just best friends and they are the baby faces.
You wait till Raw. They'll be heels again when they face the Kabuki Warriors.
I hate this storyline so much.
Yeah. And this match was no good. In-ring it was terrible, I thought. Just bad all around. The commentary was... Corey Graves was in obnoxious mode. I didn't quite like how that sounded either. Alexa was cosplaying as Buzz Lightyear, and the Iconics, it was Billie Kay, wasn't it, had her Maleficent headdress on. So it was sort of a Disney versus Disney thing. That is by far the most interesting thing that happened in this match.
Yeah, Alexa Bliss tried to fire at, I believe it was Billie Kay with the laser thing. But as we pointed out in the live stream, not one person, when Alexa did Twisted Bliss, said that was falling with style, which is failing with style.
The joke is right there.
Right there for you.
But yeah, that was rubbish. It was rubbish. Main card starts. We get some pyro. I wish they gave Edge pyro.
Yeah, but you don't want to, like, you know, give away the big pyro at the on the pre-show, do you?
Well, then put Edge on the main card. And we opened with Becky Lynch versus Natalya.
Speaking of confusing heel face dynamics. Mm.
So, you know, this is fine. I'm all for three-dimensional characters. But at the same time, Becky Lynch is one of your more over characters. And you want to give her as much momentum as possible. And to do that, you really need, like, some clearly defined heel characters to go up against.
Like Lacey Evans.
Natalya, in her home country, wearing a Canadian flag, why would you do that? Just splits the audience.
Yeah, because so she's been acting heelish for the last couple of weeks on TV. And then she came out here with the Canadian flag, and I was like, oh, okay, so she's going to be a babyface in the match because she's in her own home country. Then she starts telling the crowd to shut up, and I was like, oh, so you are a heel? In which case, why did you bring down a Canadian flag?
Yeah.
Who booked that?
Yeah, it's just sloppy. It's like, just, again, I'm all for multifaceted characters, but this is just... It's quite simple. Just keep it simple here.
But also, like, if you're Natalia, why would you carry in a Canadian flag and then tell your Canadian fans to shut up?
Yeah.
This makes no sense.
Thankfully, the in-ring stuff here I really, really enjoyed. Mostly because it's a submission match, which I thought they adhered to that stipulation very well. And I never really seen it done so well of using the ropes and turnbuckles and ring posts to enhance submissions. There was this great spot early on where Natalia had a sharpshooter on Becky Lynch round the second turnbuckle.
Yeah, around the board as well. Like, it was so, so cool. Mm. Like, visually, really, really awesome. And it was built around, as you said, them not being able to have rope breaks and them using their submission moves to try and, like, I'm just going to do as much damage as I possibly can to make you tap out. And the person in the submission move trying to use scramble to whatever they can to try and gain some sort of advantage to get out of the hold. And you had them trading submissions as well. Becky did the sharpshooter. Natalia did the disarmer. And eventually Becky won with the disarmer. I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, for me, best women's match on the show I really liked it.
Yeah,
by a long way.
I bet you by a long way, yeah.
Then we got Trish Stratus doing... Look, her delivery's bad anyway. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes.
But the script that she had to deliver here was awful.
I'm a mum.
It was I'm a mum as a women's champion, as a Hall of Famer. Like, no one speaks like this.
No, it was bad.
So that was bad. But then we got Dolph Ziggler versus Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, this match is exactly what you wanted it to be, and then some.
Yes. So, just to give you the whole overview of this, Dolph comes out, cuts a promo how Goldberg isn't good enough to face him. Goldberg gets the great entrance. That's all I want to see, really. I just want to see an entrance, and I want to see a spear. I can take or leave the jackhammer. I just want to see a spear in the entrance.
So can the Undertaker.
Yeah. Goldberg comes out. There's a great opening where Dolph just... They square off, and Dolph really quickly hits a super kick. Goes for a pin.
For a one
kick out at one. Yeah. And that was like a really fast opening. It was a really good way to hook you in. Hits another super kick. What? Like, kick out at one. But then Goldberg, spear, jackhammer. Win in 1 minute 50 seconds.
Lovely stuff.
Brilliant. Lovely. And he's walking off. Then Dolph gets on the mic again. Anyone can get lucky once. I want you to fight me again. So Goldberg's like, all right then. And he walks down and he hits another spear on Dolph. And I'm like, that was funny. It wasn't as good as the first one, though. I don't really know why you would have done that. But like a joke that gets sort of rubbish in the middle, but because you just keep doing it, gets funny again.
Yeah.
Goldberg walks off. Dolph again gets on the mic and's like, yeah, I can still beat you. Give me another chance. And Goldberg's out the arena by this point. And then his music starts up again. He comes out. It, like, picks up Dolph, taps him on the shoulder condescendingly. Looks like he's just going to leave him there, but doesn't. Bounces off one set of ropes, then the other. Huge spear. Dolph's selling was amazing. Just, like, really grabbing the gut.
He flipped over, stood up, and then fell down again. It was proper, like, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan, SummerSlam 05. But Dolph was taking it seriously and wasn't doing it to take the piss.
Yeah, yeah. It was like all the sort of athleticism of selling the bump. But I thought, like, the pain on his face, grabbing the core.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins, take notes. That's how you sell the torso.
I was going to say, Seth was, like, backstage looking at Dolph and looking at Ricochet, going like, oh, what marks, selling their injuries.
Psychology. Yeah. Don't need that at the top of the card.
To your point, I remember Kevin Smith telling the story, but in the Clerks animated series, there's a joke where they're doing, like, the Batman walking up the wall where you kind of film you just walking along and then you flip it up. And it's them walking up a building going like, why are we walking like this? And the camera rights itself and shows they're just walking on flat ground. And Kevin Smith tells the story that the guy who he was running the show with would be like, we do the joke 3 times, it's funny. You do the joke 4 times, it's not funny. You do the joke 27 times, it becomes funny again.
It's the Family Guy approach, really, with those chicken guy fights. So I loved the Goldberg-Dolph stuff.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant.
This was at up to this point, a great SummerSlam already.
Yeah. Then we go backstage. Big E and Xavier have this fun pep talk with Kofi. They say they've got a special celebrity guest to help psych him up. Of course, it's in Toronto, so the Toronto Raptors just won the NBA, whatever. Everyone had to mention that in their promos.
Every single person had to mention it.
Remember the 3 weeks after WrestleMania where no matter what feud you were in, you had to begin with, and congratulations to Kofi and Becky Lynch for winning at WrestleMania. It was that, but with the NBA Toronto Raptors Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Stanley Cup World Series.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. Watch everyone get triggered. But I've got Drake, the R&B.
Yeah.
Brilliant, just genius R&B artist.
Watch out, ladies.
Mm-hmm. He said, we've got Drake here, but it's Drake Maverick. And Drake Maverick did a funny rap. Name dropped Ealing, which is a place in West London.
I was going to say, actually, a place near and dear to my heart, so they got a big pop out of me.
And Drake said, sorry, guys, you told me R-Truth was going to be here. And then he walks off. That was funny. Then we got, continuing the great in-ring action, for me, the best in-ring match of the night, Ricochet versus AJ Styles.
Oh, this was great. This was great.
Just before it got started, though, they do a pan of all the international commentary team, and they're going across, and they say, and the Chinese commentary team, and it's R-Truth and Carmella, and they start doing really over-the-top English accents.
Yes, yeah, I believe it was the Japanese team.
Okay.
It was one of the announced teams. And, yeah, it was them, like, dressed up in disguise. It was more comedy.
Yeah, and then Drake tries to find them, and they weren't there.
There's no payoff to it, though.
No.
You think if they were going to do all of these segments, like, Brent, this is the third segment on this show, you'd think there would be some form of payoff.
Yeah.
And there wasn't.
Nah. Apologies if you can hear drilling, by the way. That's just started. It's in another room. There's nothing we can do about it. But this in-ring match, first of all, Ricochet comes out dressed as Nightwing, which is the, come on, help me out.
Dick Grayson.
Dick Grayson, Robin, sort of graduation character. Is an awesome comic book character from DC.
The Glow Up, I believe it's called. I don't think it's called that at all.
But he looked terrific. It was an all-over body suit. And just like a superhero, he, from the get-go, this was like indie Ricochet.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was just doing all these amazing flips, far beyond what we've seen him do, and at a much faster pace, I would argue, as well, than what he's usually allowed to do on TV. And then, quite early on, there's this fantastic spot where the club are outside, because AJ's been thrown out the ring by Ricochet. Ricochet goes to dive, but there's this convoluted, really like cool-looking flip over the ropes. And then runs on Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, and hits a Hurricanrana on AJ.
Yeah, so just to reiterate that, he essentially stepped on Anderson to then step onto Gallows, like on their shoulders, and then hit a Hurricanrana on AJ. No one slipped, no one fell. This was amazing.
And so Ricochet would do those sort of moves. AJ can do those sort of moves as well, but that wasn't AJ's purpose in this match. Instead, AJ just viciously chopped at the legs. His kicks were so vicious looking and created such a sound that I felt them in my own legs as a viewer.
That then led Ricochet to really sell the leg throughout it. To one point, he even did a big springboard clothesline, almost like a phenomenal forearm. He did it on one leg. He didn't just like, oh, I'm just going to knock it. I'm just going to stop selling this because I need to do the springboard. He was like, no, I need to add this into the story. I'm going to do the springboard with one leg, which actually then makes it look more impressive.
And then when AJ eventually rolls through to the calf crusher, we're like, oh no! Yeah. And it makes you so invested because you're feeling Ricochet's pain from how his knee's been worked over. It was just great stuff all the way through. But then the finish was after Ricochet took out Gallows and Anderson on the outside because they were sort of distracting.
Yeah.
Ricochet gets to the... Oh, this finish is incredible. He gets on the top rope. Anderson distracts him a little bit. Ricochet does a sort of Phoenix Splash, you reckon it was?
I think he was... Yeah, in the kayfabe world of wrestling, he was going for a Phoenix Splash because he thought AJ was on the ground.
Yeah, so Ricochet's back is to AJ. Should have checked. And he does this,
both ways.
A twisting, spinning, upside 450. Down 450 move off the top rope. So much momentum there from just all those resolutions.
All those resolutions.
New Year's resolutions. And AJ catches him in the Styles Clash, hits the Styles Clash for the win. Just perfect execution.
Again, like the stepping on Gallows and Anderson on the outside, this couldn't have gone any smoother. And it's just a testament to how good these guys are. It was phenomenal. I mean, you know, no pun intended, it was phenomenal to watch.
I hate making this comparison because I just get your impression of Taz in my head. It's like a video game, Cole. But this was like a cutscene animation in a wrestling video game.
It's one of the, like a reversal in a video game where you go like, nah, you couldn't do that in real life though, could you?
Yeah, incredible. I love this match. I love the psychology of it. I love the high spots of it. Just great.
I thought it was amazing.
Then we've got the Street Profits backstage. They sort of run through what's happened on the show so far, as is their sort of gimmick at the moment. Obligatory Raptors mention.
Yep.
And then Dawkins continuing his really quite funny infatuation with Nikki Cross.
He loves him some Nikki Cross.
He looks at the camera and starts to ask out Nikki Cross
via Instagram.
Yeah, and Ford is like, man, what are you doing? And Dawkins says, I've got to take the shot, man. It was so funny. But then Ric Flair walks in and they all start Ric Flairing up, high, you know, profiling.
Silent profiling, jet riding, yeah, all of that sort of stuff. And it was really, and then at the end of it, as the camera was like fading away, Montez Ford does this elbow drop to the floor.
Yeah, like the camera is cutting away from him as he's going down. Really funny stuff.
Those guys rule.
Yeah, unfortunately, now, the crowd were, just because they'd had so much fun already. Sure, we're only about an hour and a half into the main show, but we've also had 2 hours of pre-show. It's 3.5 hours by this point. This show flew by the way, but it was still way too long. I think it only flew by because we're quite accustomed to long events now.
I was going to say, it felt long if you include the pre-show, but many people don't, and I think that's fair enough. And actually, the card going 3.5 hours was quite lovely, really.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Good length. I think it was actually the name of my sex tape.
Nice.
But here it was Ember Moon versus Bayley. And they were, sorry, the TV is talking to us. Take that. Ember Moon versus Bayley. They worked really hard. And Ember Moon was just throwing herself into the match and at Bayley, as she's wont to do. But it just, the crowd weren't there with them. And neither were we. Like, we were just chatting a lot to each other when it was on.
A little bit. And I feel that it's just that, I think it's a combination of the two things that, yeah, we've had a lot of really big things. You got Goldberg and AJ and Ricochet and Ric Flair and all this sort of stuff. So the crowd aren't going to be massively into Ember Moon versus Bayley. But then again, I also think the company haven't given them a reason to care because Moon has spent the last couple of weeks on SmackDown being beaten up. And so you're like, well, now how can I take her seriously as a championship contender? And I just think that's reflected then in the crowd not really caring in this match. There was no storyline going into it. And what storyline was there was rubbish.
Totally. But there are so many examples of the wrestlers, when they get in the ring, they draw the crowd into the match.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, unfortunately. No. So
yeah, like we talked about Candice LeRae and Io Shirai from TakeOver. That was a show that had a match that had a storyline that wasn't great because it should have been Kairi Sane in the Candice role, but she was taken for more important things on the main roster. But those two worked so hard that they got the crowd like wrapped up into a frenzy by the end of it.
Yeah, and that was one of the better matches of the whole weekend.
Yeah, it really was,
But that didn't happen here. No. Second rope belly to Bayley for the win.
Was it a Bayley to belly? I thought it was a...
What did I say?
You said belly to Bayley.
Bayley to Bayley.
It's a terrible move, either way.
Yeah, so it is what it is, unfortunately. But then we were right back into the sports entertainment of Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens. Love this match.
This was a lot of fun. This was pure Attitude Era. Steve Austin's had the deck stacked against him. How can he overcome these odds? But he's such the badass babyface that he does overcome the odds, and the crowd loved every single freaking moment of it.
As did we. Yeah. You can't do these matches a lot because it's, you know, essentially it's overbooked and you can only really get away with it a card, TNA. But like, you've just got Shane McMahon starts off the match by saying, hey, to make sure you don't cheat Kevin Owens, I've got a special guest enforcer. It's Elias with his just very homoerotic referee vest. I love it. And he comes out and it's just, Elias is always trying to sort of interfere in the match and
in exerting his authority, being like, no, Kevin, you can't do that, when actually Owens wasn't doing anything wrong.
And Shane really didn't get anything here, which is what Shane's character should be.
It really felt, going through the gallery of this, of images, I did think, wow, Shane really didn't get a lot of effort. It felt like Kevin Owens said to him, like, look, Shane, you're not a wrestler. I am a wrestler. I should take the majority of this match.
That's where the heat comes from. Yeah. The idea is Shane walks around, he's got all the money, he's got all these seconds who sort of save the day for him, but he himself is a 49-year-old untrained wrestler who just has a bit of a daredevil streak.
But he can go toe-to-toe with AJ Styles.
Why did they start to do that? He wrestled that whole WrestleMania tag match, really, against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
It was Daniel Bryan's return match. It was his return match. And they were like, do you know who needs to work the majority of this match? Shane.
Yeah. But here, this was how he should always be used. He's just beaten up all the time by Kevin Owens. And really, the drama is in how are they going to screw Kevin Owens over? Not in, ooh, I believe Shane McMahon can legitimately defeat this very accomplished former Universal Champion.
Even to the point when you called this brilliantly, where you called it was a near fall of a DQ.
Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah, so there was a really good visual pin after the pop-up powerbomb. And then Elias slid in the chair, just like that kind of baiting, go on, hit Shane McMahon with the chair, because then you'll get DQ'd and you'll have to quit, which was something that was set up in that really good go-home promo they had on SmackDown on Tuesday. And Kevin Owens really teases that he's going to use it.
And Shane was essentially baiting him into doing it, sort of like tapping himself on the face, being like, just hit me there, just do it, just hit me right there.
Yeah, and I bought into Owens nearly losing his rage because he's got that sort of character trait at the moment. And Kevin Owens goes to swing it and stops just next to Shane's head.
And Shane's selling of it. He was ready to take the impact of it. It was a really, like, visually so cool.
Yeah, I bought into it. I bought into it as a DQ. The only thing I can think about how, like, in comparison is that really great Randy Orton-Christian match.
Yes.
Where the title could change hands on a DQ.
Yeah, it was the spit into the face.
Yeah, and you kind of forget about it, and then Randy kicks him in the dick.
That's the end.
And that's exactly what happened here. We got the ref is pulled out of the ring when Kevin Owens had it won. Kevin Owens and Elias brawl outside.
They did a ref bump. And they did everything they could to make you think that Shane is winning this match. And I think they pitched it brilliantly.
Yeah, yeah. And then Owens gets in and the referee, he's got the chair because the referee's down. But then the referee gets up, sees it.
Yeah, and then he was just like, I'm not going to use it. So the referee's getting rid of the chair. Owens turns around. Boots right to the McMahons, to the grapefruits themselves.
The big grapefruits.
Grapefruits. And yeah, hit the stunner and got the win. Sports entertained I was.
Yeah, very attitude era. Dick kicks, ref bumps, stunners.
Loved it.
Now, of course, I imagine there's a portion of people going, wait a second, Ollie, weren't you really annoyed at Seth Rollins for kicking Brock Lesnar in the dick?
Captain Hypocrite over here.
I understand where you're coming from. I think it's different.
I just think you're wrong.
I think it's different. I think this is more fitting with Kevin Owens' badass character, whereas Seth Rollins was more of a blue-eyed babyface where you're not meant to cheat. You're meant to rise above those tactics. Whereas Kevin Owens is, I'm just going to be a bit of a brawler anyway.
I'm gonna defend you even further here to say that it worked in the storyline of the match. The one that Seth did to Brock didn't work in the storyline of the match. The Kevin Owens, the whole thing that they were trying to do was Shane and Elias were trying to get him to DQ himself and be like, DQ yourself, DQ yourself, DQ yourself. And so he did the thing that would have got him DQ'd, but made the referee look in the other direction. So it worked thematically with the match.
It's outsmarting. You're cheating, but the emphasis is on the outsmarting a more dastardly heel sect.
Exactly.
Sort of Eddie Guerrero-y. You know, like Eddie Guerrero got away with it all the time. But love this match. Really, really fun. After that, we got Charlotte versus Trish Stratus, which went 16 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't all good. I thought it picked up in the last five or so. But that means there were 11 minutes where there wasn't a great... we said during the live stream that it was Charlotte wrestling herself.
Mm.
And that's what the first 10 minutes of this was. It was Charlotte would put Trish into some holds so that Trish would then flip out of it and make it look like she was doing a move onto Charlotte Flair.
Yeah. Look, a lot of people said this was one of their best matches of the night because it had this really, it did have a bit near the end for the last couple of minutes where it felt a bit real and like Trish and Charlotte were really going at it, and Charlotte won in the end and Trish got a lovely send off, standing ovation, because it's her last.
The crowd did get into it by the end as well.
Likely her last match. And the crowd were really into it a lot longer than we were. But come on, Charlotte versus Trish Stratus went 16 minutes. It was the second longest match of the night by only 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I think that's it's not a crazy statement to say. Like, if you enjoyed it, fine. But I don't think you can come at me and say, oh, what? Why were you bored? I felt it dragged a bit. I never fully bored into the action. I know that's not the point of it. It's the nostalgia pop for Trish. But for me, nostalgia pops should be very, you know, they're best served as little things.
Like Goldberg.
Like a 5-minute match, not a 16-minute match.
And by the end, I'd say the last 5 minutes of this were very good. You had Trish locking in the figure eight on Charlotte, which was a really, like, that really got the crowd up. Some big boots from Charlotte. And then, she locked in the figure eight and won. And Trish got the nice send-off at the end. So, like, it's one of those things that, you know, at the end of it, like, that was good. And it left me with a nice heart, you know, good feeling in my heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were 11 minutes there where I was pretty bored.
I guess you could say, but you need the opening 10 minutes to make that last 5 minutes so dramatic.
Tell that to Goldberg.
But I think you could have got around that quite easy. Seth Rollins. This was brilliant. Seth Rollins is backstage warming up. And then Bret Hart walks into shot. Wants to get out there as quickly as possible, sort of taps him on the shoulder, going, good luck tonight, mate, and walks off.
Yeah, he may as well have called him Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
He doesn't even know who this guy is, like, good luck tonight, Roman, and was like, walked off. There's a, you remember Casper?
Friendly Ghost?
Yeah, the movie, the live-action movie they did. Dan Aykroyd is in that movie as Ray Stantz from Ghostbusters. And there was an online comedian who once said that you can almost see him, like, chasing the paycheck as he's running off screen. He just, like, comes in, says his lines, and he's just got his eyes fixated on something. He's like, and it's the guy holding the paycheck going, like, it's over here.
Yeah.
Just say your line, and then I'll give it to you.
But what's so good about this? It was naff, anyway. It's that it just reeked of desperation of, like, Seth Rollins, please.
Look, Brett likes him.
We know he's been a bit of a dick on Twitter recently, and there's some rumors floating around about him, but please, look at Brett. You like Brett? He's in Canada. But the best thing about it is Brett does the quickest pep talk ever. It's just a touch on the shoulder. As he's walking off, he looks at the camera as if, yeah, that right? He could not care less. Is that, can I have my money now?
Oh, I thought it was so very funny.
Which was not the intended effect.
It really wasn't.
Then we got Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston, which was the longest match of the night.
By 5 seconds.
So it's a shame here because they started off hot.
Oh, didn't they just? And actually, it was so needed. This feud has been, for the story they had to play with, lackluster in its last few weeks of booking. The two go-home angles for this show over 2 weeks were two of them doing separate promos. And it just felt like no one was really into this match, like, in terms of the creative department, because they weren't writing anything for them to do. And that's a real shame, because there is a lot to be told here. There's a lot of storyline to be told here to mine into and really make Kofi seem like a big deal, make Randy seem like a really big threat, make the WWE Championship seem important, because at the moment it feels like the third most important thing on SmackDown at the moment. That's your top title on the brand. So it felt like these two knew that at the start of this match because they were like, we need to go as if this is a blood feud. We need to... The start of this match did not reflect the last 3 weeks of TV.
Mm.
And I really appreciated that. I thought it was really needed.
Yeah, they got up in each other's faces immediately, even when Greg Hamilton was still doing the ring introductions.
Yeah.
That like, Randy's just being a proper dick, pushing Kofi over the top of the referee. And then when the match gets underway, Randy's just like, he picks up the pancake and tries to give it to Kofi, and he picks it up again and he throws it at him. It was really good stuff. But then it just dragged. It just felt like flattened
it,
out.
Yeah, it did. It just sort of dragged a bit. The crowd was so into it at the start as well. Really, really into it. But they started to fall out of it as well. Like, at this, when they were, like, both hot at the start, they were like, there's chance of Kofi stupid, Randy sucks, which I thought was, excuse me, quite nice and inventive. But they then just started to quieten and quieten and quieten and quieten, which then really didn't help when you give them a BS finish.
Mm.
And this was a real BS finish.
Yeah, the crowd were, unlike Bayley and Ember Moon, the crowd were there for them.
Yeah.
But both guys put on the wrong kind of match.
I think so.
It
yeah.
were like it wasn't a bad match, but it dragged, unfortunately.
It's Triple H syndrome.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's just that we need to go 15 minutes minimum.
Yeah.
And.
And we have to do this style of match, and that's what we need to do. Even though the crowd aren't going with you, you're not changing your direction. Mm.
Like if AJ and Ricochet goes 11, 12 minutes, and the quality of what they're doing in the ring, and then you compare it to this match, it's like, ugh. But the bit before the finish was amazing. So Kofi goes for a crossbody, and Randy Orton, as is his way, hits an RKO from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And the follow-up was incredible, where Randy just lays on his back laughing.
Yeah.
Like, ha, I told you.
Told you. It only takes one. The most dangerous letters.
But then Kofi rolled outside, and I was like, I thought Kofi could have kicked out. That would have been a better comeuppance for Orton's cockiness there. And then they sort of brawl a bit outside. Orton takes him out and sort of just shows him to Kofi's family.
Mm.
And Kofi's family blankly react.
Yeah. I don't know why they consider always do this, because unless you're Miz Dad, you'd never get reactions out of these people. Remember like AJ's wife last year, who just like blankly stared as her husband went, men's like, huh.
See you for dinner next weekend, Joe.
AJ's doing his job.
Yes, yeah.
And I'll see you both next week when you come round.
Yeah, it's so the family sold this rubbishly. They're out there and the referee just counts them both out. And the crowd immediately just start chanting bull S-word.
Oh, yeah. And it was.
Yeah, and Kofi gets a kendo stick like he's snapped and he starts hitting Randy everywhere. And the crowd got in a bit with that, because hardcore spots, EC dub. But then they just like remembered, oh no, wait, this is a crap angle, and started booing again. So it's like, it's a bad angle. It came after a 16-minute match. Like, you're like, well, why did we sit around for so long if you were just going to do this? I thought that RKO moment and then showing him to the family, that's like, okay, right now, and then you have a hot last 3 minutes and we can reevaluate this match as a whole.
Absolutely.
And what a great ending.
Absolutely.
But they took the complete opposite route to that and kind of cheated the audience.
Well, but I guess this feud must continue. I kind of hope now that they can try and add some form of drama into this. But man, it's just like there's a WWE Championship curse, particularly around SummerSlam. But like last year, the go-home angle for AJ last year was Joe reading a letter.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh man, what the big go home angle that was. Joe read a letter. And then it felt like, oh well, now the feud is starting. And then that feud just got completely muddled. So I'm hoping now that this is the start of the feud and we can sort of go from there.
Yeah. After that, we got The Fiend versus Finn Balor, which was the greatest thing ever to happen to mankind.
Absolutely.
And then we got the actual main event of Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins, which, again, like the crowd had just seen this amazing Fiend thing. Balor and Brock needed to put on something big. And I thought
Balor
they,
and Brock?
Seth and Brock needed to do something big. And I think they really succeeded. I thought it was a really well-structured match.
There is a reason why Brock Lesnar is a main event draw, because he gets these sorts of reactions even when a crowd could have been burnt out completely by the Fiend and Balor. And to be honest, I wouldn't have blamed them. Like, because you see something like, well, there was a point where I said that should have closed the show. It was like the hottest point that the crowd were going to get. But actually, these two were so good at what they do, the crowd got even hotter again. Mm. And they worked, you know, what, a 5-6 minute match or whatever it was, maybe even longer than that. But I thought they worked it really, really well. I thought Seth did his babyface comeback really well. Wish he would have sold the rib injury.
Yeah,
considering
that's
that was the storyline going into the match. His selling was effectively,
yeah,
a handful of times he'd put his hand on his rib and go, ooh.
Yeah, especially the big high spot of this match, and it was fantastic to watch as a visual, was Seth Rollins hitting an amazing frog splash. Got so much height and distance on it, off the ring post onto Brock on the Mexican on the Spanish commentary table.
Yeah,
but then you're like, the frog splash from that height on the most injured part of your body, the midsection.
Rob Van Dam would sell that midsection when he did that move just in a regular match.
It's bad psychology, folks. Like, you don't hit that you don't, first of all, strategically, you won't hit that move. But okay, there's a character argument for doing it. You want to win so bad, you're going to put it all on the line. Okay, then you sell it after you hit the move, and that almost drags on the story a little bit further, the match a little bit longer. But no, he's right up, throws Brock in, stomp, kick out, F5 attempt, another stomp win. I'm like, well, just like,
why did you bother doing the big beatdown angle in the ambulance? If that wasn't going to play into this match at all, why bother doing it?
It's a very, very fundamentally bad issue with Seth Rollins and his matches. But put that aside, the rest of the match was really, really good.
I did enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's the opening was terrific, where Brock and Seth have a little bit of a start, and then Brock gets into Suplex City mode, but the first German he does, Seth backflips out of it and immediately hits a stomp.
Yeah.
Amazing near fall, and that was what the crowd needed to get into this match, because people have been very down on this, apart from that one angle where he beat him up on the stretcher.
Yeah, totally. And as I said, I think they did what they needed to do here, in the same way that Kofi and Randy did as well. It's like, well, the feud's been a bit lackluster leading into this, so let's start really hot out the gate to get the crowd into this. And I think that Seth and Brock did that well. But that's actually one of Brock's strengths. It's just like, I'm not here to mess around. I'm not paid by the hour. Mm. Like, I'm wrestling under 10 minutes because there's no need for me to go longer than 10 minutes. Yeah. It's actually better if I don't. My matches are more explosive. They're more fun. They're more engaging to watch if they don't go long. And so I think that was actually a testament to this match.
Yeah, and he also had an amazing spot where he grabbed the tape that was covering up Seth's torso and swung Seth round, just effortlessly.
And you'd think that would really hurt Seth's injured ribs.
No, but as soon as the bandages are removed, that's what was causing the pain.
It healed him.
And the other issue is that Seth Rollins frog splash really was over a 10 count. The referee should have counted them both out. And, you know, I'm fine, referee's discretion. But you just had Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton, and the referee did count them out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, just have some consistency here, guys.
But, you know, let's look at the bright side. Seth won. Seth is the Universal Champion again. It was the only title change over SummerSlam weekend, remarkably.
That's hella restraint.
Hella restraint. And, which I like. I'm really for. And in theory now, this should put Brock away from the title picture.
Yeah, I want to see him around still, definitely, but nowhere near the Universal title.
Yeah,
ever again, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that one. Yeah. Never again.
But it was a great show. I gave it 5 out of 5.
I thought it was one of the best SummerSlams in a while. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. It was easily the best WWE pay per view this year. I thought it was better than WrestleMania. I thought it was better than TakeOver.
I enjoyed it more than TakeOver.
I enjoyed it way more than TakeOver. I
can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah.
That's a first.
That is a genuine first in WWE.
Remember all the good luck WWE, that stuff. No one was saying that after Toronto on Saturday night.
A few people were. But like not as many as usual. Mm. But then there were no people saying like, oh, well, TakeOver was better. A lot of people are saying, man, SummerSlam was better than TakeOver.
It was good. And it caps off a very good month of TV for WWE.
Yeah, at least on Raw.
But SmackDown's been solid.
Been like, fine.
But pretty above solid, I would say. And you've got that, and then today's G1. What a time to be a wrestling fan.
Absolutely, yeah. But
let's get over to your super chats with Chopper.
Right, lightning round. Here we go. Vernon Jeffries says, I like the Brave Remix's theme song. I love that tune. Thinking of doing a cover it again on my piano.
Oh, yeah, go for it. Yeah, send it over.
Yeah.
The Standman 222 says, I was terrified KO versus Shane would end in a Toronto screw job or that Elias would DQ Owens mid-pin after the stunner.
I thought it might be a screw job as well, and I could have done with that because Shane not winning, the bastard, the one time of the year I bet on Shane, he bloody lost. Absolute prick that he is. It meant that I lost Wrestle League Season 2, and I will be doing the Muscle Man Dance punishment video.
Chopper just picked him at the end there.
Yeah, he beat me by one point.
Peaked it.
Tim Arndt says, my big takeaways from the show were Edge spearing Elias, Goldberg murdering Ziggler, The Fiend being awesome, and Rowan's Iced Earth shirt.
And Rowan's Iced Earth shirt got a lot of love.
It did indeed.
Judas Black says, Kofi and Randy, match of the night.
I think that's sarcastic.
Might not be. They might think it's match of the night.
Hey, good for them if they enjoyed it.
Graham Scrivener says, Bray looks cool as the Fiend. Also, I told you a couple of weeks ago that Kenta was turning heel. Got you guys.
Hey, and now Big E's going to turn heel too. Yep, it's all time. Happening.
Ant the Great says, The Fiend versus Black in a cage match. The Fiend is stuck outside saying, let me in, while Black is sitting in the middle. Have you tried knocking? That's a WWE classic right there.
Yeah.
Great comment.
That's how you ruin both characters. That is the way to do it.
It's great. Wilson Simon says, personally, I thought the show was boring except for Becky and The Fiend. I probably decided before the show I was going to hate it, though.
That might be the case.
Yeah, I think that's on you.
Yeah. I thought the show was great.
Spinorama 29 says, my only complaints were the finish of the Kofi match and the first half of the Charlotte match, which was just a bit boring. Otherwise, 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd also say Bayley and Moon didn't really do much for
me
either.
Yeah, but yeah, that Kofi Rani finish wasn't great.
Minato Dono says, The Fiend's debut was so good. Can't wait to see what they'll do for Bayley Sting.
It's coming.
Alan Sale says, Harm beat, heel beat, Harm beat, heel.
So that's Bray listening to his fists. That was a nice way to give Finn a bit of a flurry, because it wasn't Bray sort of not being good enough. It was just like he was having a time out with his
hands.
And
there's a moment when he backed into the corner, again grabbing at the mask as if he's trying to take the mask off. Oh, it's great character work.
Having a time out with his hands is also what Tim Arndt did.
Joey the Dragon Venom Machine, great name, says, who would have thought Husky Harris to The Fiend?
Yeah, that's a hella character progression.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be that guy that was before it was cool, but I was like Husky Harris Day saying like he's going to be a top star in this company.
Yeah, he had such a different body type and
such a look
style
about him, yeah.
Undisputed Zaya says, after my debut, I need to make an impact. Let me in.
Let me in.
Jack Benner says, who should be the first to beat The Fiend, or should The Fiend be like The Demon?
I mean, I think it's too early to be talking about like who should beat him and things like that. I'm not really into sort of the fantasy booking warfare side of things about The Fiend. I just want to kind of like see how it goes. I'm curious to just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Asaya Fakiri says, We can all agree The Fiend is fantastic, but do you think WWE will ever trust the character to hold the WWE or Universal Championship?
My worry is, if they push him that much, it's because Vince McMahon looks at them and goes, well, that's a supernatural character, and I love the McCarn.
Or, another way to look at this is that there was a lot of Bray Wyatt merchandise on sale at SummerSlam. Mm. And there's a lot on sale on WWEshop.com. And by all accounts, it's selling very, very well.
It's mostly me.
And if you want to get pushed in WWE, you become a big merch seller. That is how you get to the top of the game. And if his merch is selling that well and that crowd reaction, Vince may say, like, we've got a star on our hands. Let's push him, pal.
Lord Zeus says, new Raw rankings. Rawsome, Raw right, average, Rawful, bottom of the bar rule.
Bottom of the bar rule is good.
Bar rule,
I think we'll stick with what we've got. I forget what they are enough as it is.
Dave and Rajan says, SummerSlam was good, 4.5 stars, but you guys made it awesome, 7 stars. Also, my name is pronounced Dave N. Keep up the great work.
Thank you to everyone for joining us over the weekend.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Miguel 8A says, watching Orton matches are always a bore to watch.
Not always. Yeah, he does have good matches. And it looked like he cared here. He just wrestled the wrong style of match.
I agree.
Pirate King Jake says, The Fiend versus Aleister Black needs to happen.
Yeah, but not for a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like everyone's just trying to rush this into like the big angles now. It's like in the super chats yesterday, everyone was saying we need to get Bray versus Brock next. I'm like, guys, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's not rush this. Let's enjoy the ride. Let's build. Bearing in mind, like, this debut has been building since WrestleMania. Like, and that's why it's been impactful. It's had 4 months to gestate. Let's take this slow, take it steady, let's not rush this.
Yeah, you're all being the, you know, the creepy guy in the relationship. Well, let's move in together, let's do this right now.
Ron's Rajan says, how long until they put 3D graphics of Bird Raptor on the Fiend's entrance?
Oh, the augmented reality.
You love it.
I hate those graphics.
I was thinking about it. I forgot completely about them, but the worst of the AR graphics was the Bliss and Cross ones with the little tennis balls with
What's
faces
the
on
point?
Them.
They're terrible. Sir Darko 3 says, who's ready for Seth versus Baron Part 5 at the next pay-per-view?
Yeah, someone else tweeted me saying, like, we're definitely getting Seth versus Baron next.
Well, he's, you know, big return.
Yep. We're talking about the biggest re-debuts in the company.
Triveshkar Purai says, imagine the fiend using a severed head to show us his previous or next victim. Would it work, aside from the cost factor?
I think that would be pretty cool.
I think it'd be really cool. Yeah. I know, to be honest, I'd imagine Bray is fronting a lot of this cast.
Mm.
Sadako 3 comes back again and says, so does Ziggler get a random title shot now?
Could be.
Never know. Anton
H. He's had enough this year, to be honest. He's had a lot of random title shots this year.
It's true. Anton H. says, Lesnar to be the next WWE champion for SmackDown on Fox.
It's not the worst shout in the world,
it
you know.
It could happen, yeah.
Dutch325 says, The Fiend has almost 1 million views already.
Oh, wow.
YouTube.
Well, that's another metric that WWE really look at, so
oh,
that's
yeah.
good.
That is good.
Will Adams, Luke Owens' number one fan, says, hey guys, just here to say I appreciate all the work you guys have done. I feel like you guys are really my friends and watch your videos every day.
You are our
the
friend, mate.
Mutual,
the
mate.
Feeling is absolutely mutual. Let us in.
Ben Johnson says, Gargano versus Seth, this being Seth's heel turn.
I think Seth turning heel is a pretty good idea, actually. Just because I'm a bit uninspired by him right now.
Yeah. I think Seth, it certainly wouldn't hurt him.
Mm.
I don't think it's like, no one is sitting there going like, oh, he's so over as a babyface, then you can't really turn him heel now, but maybe it could be at the right time.
It would be difficult for them to reconcile how he's still going out with Becky Lynch, though.
But they're not mentioning that anymore, though, are they?
But Renee Young and Dean Ambrose, you just go, I don't know, just don't talk about it at home.
Yeah.
Steve Winyard says, move 205 Live guys and the title to NXT.
Could happen when they go to FS1.
Raw's 3 hours long. Get those guys back on Raw.
Yeah. Purple ropes and everything.
Maybe not.
We got a £5 super chat, but the message was retracted, and I can't tell who it's from, so thanks whoever it was.
Thank you.
Ron's Rajan says, will Luke finally admit the mandible claw looks great on The Fiend? I don't know if you had to admit it before.
I didn't say it was bad, did I?
You were initially down on the idea of him using
was
it.
Was I?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I was pro it. And history will say me as the winner there.
Well, absolutely. And then in which case, if I did say it was bad, I don't remember Tilly saying, I don't remember being that against it that I was like,
yeah, you weren't.
It was
down.
A defining character trait for yeah. me. But yeah, maybe I just said that. Maybe what I said was, I don't think he needs a new finisher because I think Sister Abigail is still over. But yeah, it's fine to add it to a repertoire, absolutely.
Michael Montiel says, DIY to SmackDown. Also, I'd love to see Gargano versus Styles.
Yeah, I was going to say DIY to SmackDown is what we were saying on the NXT mm-hmm. stream. I think that'd be great.
Graham Scrivener's back again saying, Kenta turn heel told you so. Again.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch that angle, especially with Shibata coming back.
Shibata thing's so
I'm really
cool.
looking forward to watching
really
the show.
Great.
It's so good. Tomo says, wait a minute. Edge hitting a spear in Toronto. Biggie heel turn confirmed.
It's going to happen.
We missed you last night, Tomo, man. Everyone was asking after you in the chat.
Danny W says, just an FYI, WWE had to clear Edge for that spear.
Well, of course they would do.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to clear everyone to hit moves.
Yep. Has6 says, Fiend versus Strowman. Could this work?
I mean, that's a good story to tell because of the existing Wyatt family stuff.
I actually really like it.
I don't think that's his next feud. I feel like it's too big time.
That's why I think Matt Hardy's like a good stepping stone.
I think Strowman should be like the one after next. Or
yeah,
maybe the one after that.
Yeah.
Slayer X Unknown says, good afternoon, guys. Super chat for super people.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Thank you very much.
Tomo's back again.
Tomo.
To say, you got it wrong, Ollie. The Toronto Raptors actually won the Super Bowl. Get it right.
Don't trigger the comments. People get really, really annoyed about it. That's what I've discovered over this weekend. People get really, really annoyed if you make jokes about it.
But it's fun to annoy those people.
That's why your local sports team jokes work.
Yeah.
Heel Dan from Pensacola, Florida says, well, hello, Chopper. Hashtag Chopper is Illuminati. Hashtag Fiend is life.
Yeah, so this is a follow-up. So you said you weren't going to read out his comment from the NXT review because you made the executive decision that it wasn't for reading on air.
Sure.
Because I can't remember the words you said, but you said it's not being read out on air. And he then took the knock with you over the Super Chat saying that it wasn't perverted, didn't have profanity in it, and he's now just against you.
Fair enough. Jacob Ward says, CM Punk chant when Ricochet hit the Anaconda Vice.
Oh, yeah, forgot about that spot, and we couldn't remember the name of it. What's that called?
Snake Move.
Topic Talk Wrestling says, I bet they won't sell the Wyatt Lanterns online.
They've graduated from that, bloody guts.
Tristan Thorne says, do you think that every time The Fiend starts a new rivalry that the Lamp should be the head of the last rivalry he took out? I think that'd be sick, as someone mentioned
That's
earlier.
That's very cool.
Sadako3 again says, why do WWE champs bring their kids to SummerSlam?
Well, yeah.
Bring your family to work day.
To see me get beaten up in a work environment.
Yeah. Maybe everyone saw Beyond the Mat and was like, that Mick Foley's family had a wonderful time at the Royal Rumble in 1999.
Stand by me.
So let's all have that. Do you remember when you thought it would be a good idea for us to all sing Stand By Me during that at our live show?
You wanted to count along with the chair shots.
That wasn't my idea. I can't remember whose idea that was, but I think it was mine.
Yeah.
By the way, both were bad ideas.
Jeremy Smith says, good day, gents. Had to miss SummerSlam, but couldn't miss a lovely time with the boys. Now I'm off to celebrate my birthday exploring Badlands National Park. Thanks so much for the consistent content.
Oh, happy birthday. Have a fun time in the park.
Lovely time in the boys.
Lovely time in the park. Trent J says, The Fiend made me love WWE again.
Yeah, I think that's sentiment.
Seen a lot of like really sort of people going like, oh man, this is why I like pro wrestling. I can finally enjoy WWE again.
And it's like, I love New Japan, I love AEW, but this feels so like WWE at its best. In their area, this is
it's sports
peak
entertainment,
WWE.
And it's wonderful.
Adrian Wells says, when do you think Velveteen Dream will get the call up? What's next for Bray?
Well, let's answer the Dream question because we don't really know what's next for Bray. But I don't know, man. Like I thought he'd have been called up this year because he was kind of he ran out of things to do in NXT, but he still got the championship, so probably not anytime soon.
Yeah, I think maybe after Mania next year.
Yeah, but also if I'm Dream, I'm not in any rush, mate, because you're not going to get those entrances when you get to the main roster. You're going to Bobby Roode your career.
If NXT is going to FS1, maybe they want to keep him as a featured player on that.
It's very true.
Yoshi Nokami says, hello there, guys. Love your work. The Kofi versus Orton match was worse for us in the crowd because we couldn't see the family angle, and to us, the match just ended without any reason.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, actually, the way they filmed it and showed it on the network, they didn't show the referee counting. The bell just rang, and the commentators went, had to count out.
Yeah, so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
John Michael Bagsane says, Matt Riddle to retire Goldberg.
Hey, man, like it feels like that. If WWE is smart, they would try and capitalize on this.
Yeah, I think they're building it as well because they had an interaction on that watch along with Riddle and Goldberg.
I don't know if that was what Riddle told a story about, and he met Goldberg, and Goldberg was very upset with the comments that he made about Super Showdown.
Yeah.
But what I don't want this to be is Will Ospreay Vader.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I want this to be.
Yeah, Riddle should, like Goldberg can lose and it's fine.
And actually that will massively elevate Riddle. Yeah.
Joey the Dragon Venom Machine is back again saying SmackDown Live, Brock comes out, F5's Kofi.
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, certainly is building into October.
Steve Wynyard says, what next for Bray? Lesnar to put over The Fiend?
I wouldn't put Brock in that slot. We've already talked about it potentially being Matt Hardy's a good idea.
Tim Arn is back again saying, I sold my wrist more than Seth sold his ribs.
Again. Because Tim Arnt was so excited by The Fiend, he furiously masturbated.
And injured himself.
David Cantliff says, The Fiend is my new spirit animal.
Yeah, he's great.
Oh, what a terrifying spirit animal.
Nico the Arms Dealer says, I think Becky learned the sharpshooter from watching The Rock perform it. It was that bad.
You got to sell it more than the person in the move.
Yeah, Rock. I was going to say, it always did look like Rock was being hurt by it. It's like, oh my God, I'm getting cramp.
Jeff Perullo says, Fiend versus Demon at Clash, please. I'll be rocking my support WrestleTalk sign, second row, on camera.
Oh, nice.
Their ad is for Roman Daniel Bryan at Clash, supposedly.
Okay.
It's always kind of subject to change. I think they're already advertising like matches for Hell in a Cell, which is way months out. So It may happen, it may not happen. But, I mean, it very well may happen. I don't know if we're going to get Demon, though, at Clash of Champions, if the reports are he's going away for a bit.
I'm glad that you've got a Support WrestleTalk t-shirt, though. There was a Cultaholic one opposite the hard cap.
I think he said a sign. He's going to take a sign with him. So, I mean, either way, thank you.
Undisputed Zai's back again saying, soon I will take over, run.
Soon I will take over. Who said that?
Undisputed Zaya.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Good for you.
Marcus Roman says, Fiend versus Taker at Mania, so Taker passes the torch.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great... I would actually... A Bray burying his own demons, going up against all those big feuds of the past, which he has done on Twitter. He's sort of addressed them.
Yeah.
And that would be a really nice, like, make good for that feud.
Yeah, it really would do.
Dacky Smurf says, The Fiend versus Luke Harper.
Well, that would require Luke Harper to get on TV, and I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
And I just don't think it's, you know, Luke Harper's got no momentum. People have kind of forgotten about him, unfortunately. So well, that's not a good idea.
He can't do a southern accent, so why bother putting him on TV?
Uncle Nunny says, Fiend versus Taker at Survivor Series. Fiend wins with the Mandible Claw.
Love it. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Tomo, it's back Tomo. Again. Generous donation saying, I do apologize for not being at either the TakeOver or SummerSlam streams. I've been really sick lately and have been getting out of bed very late. At least I'll be here for tomorrow's stream, I hope.
Feel better, Tomo.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Marcus Roman says, can't help that I love creepy clowns, but I do find this to be pushing out of PG era, making me love everything with Bray's new gimmick and scaring kids.
Yeah.
It's still within the PG confines, though.
Oh, it's pushing it, though.
Yeah, but it's still
within, in a good way, yeah.
But it's like the TakeOver main event. Like, that was a PG match, but it was pushing the boundaries of what you can do within the PG limits.
I love, like, when I think about back up being a child myself, seeing that really scary stuff, and it was, like, probably too adult for me, but not too adult for me. That'll impact a lot of kids. That will be burnt into their memories.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like, Jurassic Park. I saw Jurassic Park in the cinema when I was 7 years old. And my dad was, like, not sure if he was going to take me to go and see it because he read the book and he was like, the book's very violent. Like, I don't know if I should take my kid to go see it, but it's Spielberg, so it should be okay. And he said the first thing I did during that raptor sequence is I just buried my head into his arm because I couldn't look at the screen. And he went, oh, I've made a terrible error. I was fine after that, though.
Character
I was fine
building.
Yeah, it was character building. To the point when I was talking to my friend about it the following day, I had no memory of that scene whatsoever.
Funny you should mention it affecting kids, because Tristan Thorne just says, by the way, The Fiend has given my 7-year-old nightmares. Definitely shows how creepy he is. Yeah. Perfection.
Character building.
Character building.
I missed one from earlier, so I'm going to go back and check that real quick. Apologies, Killjoy, who said, I listened to your SummerSlam 2000 review recently. Big thanks for Ollie for getting the words Bonacek stuck in my head for the last couple of days.
Did I tell that story?
You did, yeah.
Bonacek.
Undisputed Zaya is back, just saying, just trying to get over, guys.
Cool. Yeah.
Keep at it.
Has Six says, will Matt Hardy be broken or not against The Fiend?
I don't think it matters.
I would prefer not goofy. I'd prefer, like, serious Matt trying to talk Bray down.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't want to put The Fiend, which feels serious, in with the more wacky side of the Woken universe.
Yeah, completely.
And then it's just Killjoy who just reminded me to find the super chat that I missed earlier. So that is all.
Well,
chopper conspiracy. So skipping people's comments.
Chopper hates
it. It was an accident.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.